Welcome to the Practice Advantage Podcast. I'm Dr. Justin Manning, and here on the podcast, I interview experts from within and outside the eye care industry on the business management topics and advice that matter most to you, your practice, your patients, and your success. Let's dive in. Welcome back to another episode of the Practice Advantage Podcast. When it comes to running an optometry practice, managing the relationships with our vendor partners is critical to our success. On one hand, each vendor partner wants you to be successful, because when you're successful, they're successful. And on the other hand, they equally want you to increase the amount of business you do with them and have a host of tools to show you why you should. So understanding and leveraging data is key, both the overall KPIs of your practice and the data the vendors share with you. So when working with a multitude of vendors, it can be overwhelming knowing what data to use, how to use it, especially when it comes from the vendors themselves. To help us navigate this world, my guest today is Dr. Stephen Faith, one of two partners in Livermore Optometry Group, a seven-doctor, very successful practice in Livermore, California. Dr. Faith graduated from UC Berkeley School of Optometry and is a past clinical instructor with the school. He is a wealth of knowledge, both clinically and in business. Steve, welcome to the Practice Advantage Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for the invite, Justin. Happy to talk shop.
So, Steve, before we dive into the best ways of partnering with our vendors and how we best leverage the data they provide, tell us a little bit more about your practice. What's one of the greatest business lessons you've learned along your journey in ownership?
Yeah, Livermore Optometry Group. It's one of the longest continuously running independent practices in California. I think there's one other office that's literally older. So it was started in 1947 by UC Berkeley grad, Dr. Ray Gurney, came to Livermore. At that time, fledgling farm wine industry area, and started a practice. And ironically, he was involved in the early stages of California Vision Service, CVS, which ended up being VSP, ultimately. We're currently one location, and we're 40 miles east of San Francisco. Seven doctors, five full-time equivalents, essentially, and 28 staff with 20 full-time equivalents. Currently, we are in a major area that we have with, obviously, the wine industry. As we like to say, Napa makes parts, Livermore makes wine. And we, in our area, have a large national laboratory, research laboratory. So as a result, we have a high percentage of VSP patients as part of our patient base. We currently are network providers for Medicare, Medi-Cal, and all the available PPOs that we can be a member of in our area. 50% of our patient base, however, has Kaiser Permanente for their medical coverage, which actually locks out all external carriers and doctors, basically. And so we have a large, in our area, primary care medical practice, but basically 50% of the patients we see are a little bit challenging to work around. Ironically, the diabetic eye care plan and EMEC programs and VSP help us navigate that. Best advice. Oh, let's see. I remember early on having lunch with Dr. Gurney. He said, Steve, you know, independent practice is not that complicated. You only have to do two things. Make sure people like you, and then control your personal and professional overhead.
I think those are two really good pieces of advice. And yeah, the more that you can create a great experience for patients and ultimately have them like you, the better off you'll be. I think that's true of business across the board. And I did not know the connection there, you know, way back when, to when the practice got started and who helped start it. It's just it makes me laugh. This profession is a very, very small world.
Yeah. We But our patients and even our kids, right, know that when they go across the country, and it's like, oh, do you know Justin Mann? Yeah, oh, I know him. You know, it's a big but rather small profession.
From a optometry family, my father's an OD, my younger brother's an OD as well, and so yes, I know that all too well. Steve, as you talked about as you shared Livermore's story, it's a very successful large practice. How many different vendors do you work with on a regular basis? Frames, lenses, contacts, equipment, insurance companies, and you did speak a little bit to that earlier. But when it comes to all of those vendors you work with, what's your approach in how you manage those relationships?
That's a great question. You know, until recently meaning 5 to 7 years ago, we didn't have any idea. You know, the average doc, you just saw patients and somehow frames are on the inventory on the board and contacts are in the contact lens clinic and et cetera, et cetera. We got to a point where with a staff our size and with the number of patients we see, et cetera, and also honestly, with the high number of third party patients we see, VSP patients, it became critical for us to manage our overhead. And one of those things was figuring out our vendors. We at one point had 43 vendors that we worked with. Now those vendors are, you know, everything do we all think of classically, but I think the average doc doesn't realize the number of business equipment supply people, the insurance people, the attorneys, the CPAs, the IT techs. For us directly in our on our side of our supply side, if you want to call it the optical side of our business, we had almost 30 to 35 individual reps calling on us at one point. And that was just ludicrous. I affectionately called it the dog and pony show. And every Friday, you know, we have a meeting and here comes the reps coming out of the truck with their boxes of, you know, frames and box of donuts. And then here we are. Well, did we really do anything? So we started after 43 of them, we started looking at the how much does it actually cost us? It actually costs us in our office about $100 an hour in staff costs just to see reps and education meetings and things like that. So at our peak, we spent over $40,000 a year, essentially, in staff costs and overhead in seeing reps. So we needed to change that. I mean, obviously, everybody knows with margins being a little tighter on some plans and things like that, we had to change that. So we started to look outside our industry. We looked at sporting goods chains, wine liquor retailers, auto parts stores. Just to find out how they all deal with their inventory and their service industry individuals. And what we found out was they basically have to a T, almost all have centralized buying teams. And these buying teams actually then use their local data to actually determine what spark plugs are in the local AutoZone, what shoes, running shoes are in the local Dick's Sporting Goods. It's like, well, how come we don't do that? That doesn't make any sense. Why are we having somebody in our office who great professionals and are opticians, and we all have those, but do they understand what they're doing? No, they have a tendency to kind of put out on display what they feel most comfortable while selling. So we decided to blow that system up a little bit. So we decided, well, why don't we let's find some reports. Well, that didn't help. The EHR we had at the time generates reports, but it's accounts payable, accounts receivable, didn't tell us anything about our patient base or our demographics. So we went to our suppliers, right? We went to the frame and the lens folks, and honestly, they weren't much help either. No disrespect to them, but that's not their forte. Outside of our own sales data, they really didn't know anything about our practice. So at that point, it's kind of interesting. We kind of went to, we looked at our VSP report, the report we get every year that I don't think everyone pays attention to, doctor-wise. And so we looked at it. And in the past, it was just that report that came every 3 months, and we looked at it. Okay, great. We saw this many patients. Here's this, and here's that. Well, we looked at it and broke it down a little differently, and it was actually very interesting because we were able to look at the age of our patients, the units of products that we sold through our claims. Of course, they didn't know anything about the rest of our practice, level of quality that our patients were buying. So it was kind of interesting. It's like, well, wait a second. Why don't we delve into this more? And so it teased us with a little bit of the surface of our business. So we actually got into at that point is when the industry was looking into a lot of support programs, Edge Pro, Glimpse, a lot of these companies that actually have programs that mine your data. And it was a godsend. My gosh, it was a tremendous awakening of what we had available to us. And so we decided to go with Edge Pro. And by the way, we have no connection with them financially. We pay it just like everyone else does, but it was incredible on the initial assessment of how it actually gave us better information than our EHRs did. So now we had all this information. We weren't sure what we were going to do with it, and so we started to again get into the whole idea of, well, what do other industries do when they have their own sales data? And so that's how we started into this road. And it's I think honestly, I think our suppliers, some of them, I don't think they wanted to see us when we pull out our report because oftentimes they don't have answers to the questions we're going to ask them.
Oh, there's so many things that you just said there that we could dive into. And I'd love to, going back, I love that you took the time to look outside of eye care into other industries. And there's so much that we can learn from how other businesses do business. What was that process like? How did you get the information or the data that you were looking for to help influence the changes that you made in working with vendors?
In our area, obviously we're a big wine industry area, so we have a lot of I've just a lot of colleagues who are in that industry. And then how does Southern Wines and Spirits, who distributes distilled spirits and wine to Safeway in our area, for example, how do they do it? I had the ability to talk to those folks. We also have some people in the automotive industry in our area, and then how do they manage their inventories, et cetera. And so that's where it started off. And then of course our staff and our executive team hate it when Faith comes back with some ideas about, hey, you know what they do in Dick's Sporting Goods? You know what they do? Because then all of a sudden they think we need to do that too. And it kind of makes some sense. And so it was actually just the collegial relationships initially. And then they pointed me in the direction of how do they manage their products and their retail outlets. It's kind of funny, Justin. So at some point or other, we had a real good connection into the Safeway, the retail supermarket chain setup. And honestly, at that point, I had no idea that some of their vendors actually paid for shelf space, right? And the end caps and all these things. And so, hey, that's a great idea. We're going to charge our frame companies to put their frames out. Well, that didn't go over well, as you can imagine. They weren't quite ready for that. So I'm still working on that one, though.
I love it. If you can be successful at that, let us know how that goes and the best ways to approach that. It made me laugh as you're talking about the conversations and the data that you now pull out is part of the conversations you have with vendors to make the best decisions for your practice. As I said at the beginning, vendors do want you to be successful because they will also be successful if you're successful. But at the same time, they do have this focus of trying to sell as much as possible and care probably a little bit more about that first, and at the same time, want you to be successful. So how do you balance that challenge? They want you to be successful, but they also want you to buy as much of their stuff as possible. So how have you balanced that, or how do you currently balance it when it comes to working with those vendors?
Well, with the data, with through our Edge Pro data and sales data, it's easy now. Now that we're able to kind of determine our business metrics and all those KPIs and metrics we've all had throughout the industry, the MBA folks, the name your group who has their metrics. Some of those apply, some don't. But the one that came up with us was the fact that now that we knew what our data was, how could we do that? So what we looked at, and at that time there was a couple of industry people we had consulted and talked about, you know what, docs have too many brands, they have too many supply. Dick's Sporting Goods does not have as many running shoes under Nike's umbrella or Adidas, et cetera. They limit that to based on their demographics. So we looked at that, and what we essentially came down to is we now carry only 25 frame brands in our office. I mean, I think the average doc doesn't realize that. They think they're working with Saffold or Marchand or Luxottica or something, but under each one of those umbrellas is 7, 8 to 10 licensing agreements that these folks have. And so we start adding those things up. What we looked at is we decided, this is about 5 years ago, we decided we're going to have these 25 frame brands, but we'll only continue to carry those brands that are in the top 25 of unit sales, top 25 of dollar sales, or the top 25 in growth in any of these categories. We make some exceptions, the children's and safety and things like that. But what we also had a bottom limit of, if we don't sell 2 frames per week or 100 per year, we're not going to renew them. We determined at the same time, because I'm kind of a numbers geek, is it costs us $12 to maintain a frame out on display by the time you rotate it, dust it, do whatever. So these ones that didn't sell, we ended up saying, hey, if we're not selling 100 of your brand per year, or you're not in these other metrics, we call those the dusters. We're dusting them more than selling them. So the dusters we get rid of. The next year they're out.
That's fascinating to be able to look at it in that way and realize one, how much it costs you to maintain the frame on the board and the impact that that has from a turn rate. I think I wish a lot more practices dove deeper into those numbers and understanding that and leveraging their data to be able to make those decisions. So we think about those vendors, they all have their own data points and their own reports that they want to share with you. Which of those vendor reports have you found to be beneficial? How do you compare those numbers that they share with you with your internal KPIs that you manage? And again, the end goal being to make the best decisions for the practice and your patients. What does that look like?
Well, honestly, no disrespect to all the vendors who are support the system here. Most of the reports are not very useful for us. As we found out, think of it this way. If I own a sporting goods store and the Nike shoe rep comes up and tells me how great I'm doing on selling running shoes and basketball shoes, and we get this all the time with frame companies, and that is, oh, you're up 575%. Well, yeah, because we sold three of you last year and now we're up to 10, right? I mean, that doesn't do us any good. They know about themselves, but they don't know anything about. Back to my shoe store or the sporting goods analogy is that they don't know anything about my hiking boots, my golf shoes, my tennis rackets, or anything else. So most of these individual frame, I'm not picking on frames in particular. Lenses can do the same thing, and contact lenses as well. They really don't have. They have a very narrow niche on what our business is like. And as we tell the contact lens people, contact lenses are 100% of your world, but it's only 19% of our gross revenue and 10% of our net income. So you guys are talking to us about something that I'm not even sure why I should be talking to you because it's not a factor in my overall revenue. So their reports, understandably, are driven for their own egocentric reasons because they have to. We found out we're not that useful for us. We started looking at these guidelines of other things besides just sales, and that is within the Edge Pro family. And I know Glimpse has the same type of thing. Is there's a lot of standard reports they have. And I think the average doc doesn't realize, we didn't, obviously, an office like ours, we didn't realize till we delved into them. Yeah, we didn't have any idea what a $0 frame was. A $0 frame, if docs don't know, are the ones that you're basically selling, for example, under a VSP coverage. You get the wholesale cost of the frame back and a minimal dispensing fee, but basically you're making no money. Well, we had no idea. We thought we were helping out those patients. So until we started delving into that, because Edge Pro told us about it, we were kind of clueless about that whole process. The other things that come up is, honestly, our doctors. We pay all of our doctors as a percentage of collections. And after a significant number of docs, once they leave the exam room, they're kind of lost on what happens after that. And so we can now generate reports to determine the production of our doctors per exam, per hour, and per day. And so as a result of that, we can even talk to them about what's happening, what's going on in the exam room. For example, we had one doctor last year whose production per exam and per day dropped off. We talked about it with all their group. We have these meetings all the time and found out that she was kind of not consistent in the exam room with making ophthalmic recommendations to her patients and relied more on the staff to help out in that regard. So she quickly found out that that doesn't work as well as coming from the doc. So guess who's back to recommending from the exam chair again? So those kinds of things are how these information helps out.
Love being able to make those data-driven decisions because you know what's happening in your practice, where the opportunities are, where the challenges are, and at the same time, the things that need to be continued to be done to continue to be successful. I mean, I feel on one hand we've been a bit critical of our vendor partners because they are out to drive business and grow the business, but at the same time, we have to make the right decisions for our business. What does a really good vendor partnership look like in your practice? And how does that benefit both parties in the long run?
That's a great observation because I think there is that line we walk between, hey, they're buddies and they're not just bringing donuts on Friday nights and or Friday mornings at meetings and what we're doing. But also, I think most docs, when we started looking at our data, we got more objective about it. And one of the challenges we had, and I think everybody does, is there's relationships that the company representatives have with our office, whether it's with a doctor, whether it's with a staff. And in our world, because we're so big, and it, to our fault, one downside to having a big office is we're disconnected sometimes from what's going on out on the floor. You have a number of those companies that have relationships with our staff, and those are great, but it didn't make business sense. And so the companies that came with, to us that actually had the biggest influence on our support is exactly that. What is the support? And besides the obvious, everybody thinks, you know, their company's frames are, I'm picking on frames at the moment, are quality. Oh my God, they're fantastic. Everybody, they're a niche and everything. They all are. But as one of the things that came out of our data from Edge Pro was the fact that we only had four, basically four brands that patients were asking for. And we knew what those four were. The rest, it didn't matter. If we switched from a distributor who had a certain category, I'm not going to, you know, name drop, but if Safilo had a certain price point at 150 and we switched that with Marchand's 150, nobody cared. Our data showed us that, you know what? The patients aren't coming in asking for XYZ except for these top four or five brands that we have. And we know exactly what those are. So that helped us to go to the, you know, the companies we work with. Contacts are a little different, right? Because that's the docs have a little bit more decision in that. Well, not a little bit, a lot more. In our office, the docs only make the recommendations on contacts. But we do know in the contact lens arena that, you know, MyDay is not that much different than Daily Totals One, which is not that different than Biotrue in a success overall. So in the frame world, for example, we went and said, hey, here's all this data, gang. Honestly, you know what? We don't need these bottom people. So how do we do? So we approached our vendors a little differently in the frame space. And that is, we need more out of you guys. You know what? We need some more help. Here's what we need. And so we, you know, essentially started off with this idea of kind of circling back to, yeah, support. We need a dedicated person to take care of our problems and all those kind of things. But moving forward is we need to have a relationship where we can reduce our cost of goods. And we can reduce our overhead costs of implementing your company. So we started a number of years ago throwing this idea out to what we call the big three suppliers, saying, you know what? That whole industry hates the C word, right? Consignment. Nope, we're not looking for consignment. I'm looking for strategic inventory management. We call it a SIM program in our office. And that is, we're looking for the player and we will turn the keys over to the kingdom. All right. We know from our data, almost 68% of all of the purchases that our patients made in the last 3 years could have been supplied by any of the framed vendors that we work with. So based on that, you know, we went to them and said, hey, here you go. We want X number of frames. We want this much consigned inventory. We need this kind of information. We need the shipping things, et cetera, et cetera. And it actually, we had a couple that kind of had interesting responses and helped out. But it was surprising to us that two or three of the main distributors at that point didn't have the infrastructure in place to supply us and keep track of the accounting of a lot of our inventory. You know, it's no different than AutoZone. It's like, how would you, why would AutoZone buy spark plugs from a company that didn't keep track of its own inventory? So anyway, it was an interesting conversation. None of them liked it. I didn't get them to pay for us yet, Justin, to a spot on the frame board. But we have now two main players that I think about 50% of our board space is an inventory that they manage. It's not consigned. We just said, hey, you know what? You're a great partner. Here's your spots. You fill it with what you want. Here's our sales data. You tell us what we need to do. And now our staff can get together once every 3 months and have a fun time talking about marketing and what's going on in the world outside of our office.
So much valuable wisdom there. I One of the things that really jumps out to me is when we talk about a great vendor partnership is you know your business, you know what your business needs, you have that data to back it up, and the vendors that respond to that and say, yeah, we're going to show up to help and support, and we're going to benefit along the way, but we're going to provide what your business needs to be successful. I mean, it really is that partnership aspect of working with those vendors. And by knowing your business and knowing what matters most to you and what you need, you can communicate that more clearly to them. And then the really great vendor partners can respond. And I think that's a really great framework and blueprint for all of our listeners and how they approach the vendors that they do business with.
You know, one of the interesting things you brought up, made me think about, is we talked about the VSP report and how people glaze that over. So we actually, We went to VSP. It's, obviously, we're a high percentage VSP, so it might not work in somebody who's a 10% VSP office. But we went to them and said, "Hey, you know what? We need more than this. Here's our data. Here's what WeSales data is, and I want to compare that with your claims, my claims, right? I want to see if this is consistent with the claims we have at the office. But better than that, I need to see, or would like to see, what other offices in our geographic location." Location within 10, 15 miles, what those offices' claims look like as well." And it was initially kind of a funny little question because I think a lot of our reps are used to faith asking for stuff that can't happen. But it's like we got a report back from our professional reps that broke down, I think it's seven practices within 15 miles of us, the actual claims. It's all anonymous. It would didn't know, but and we don't know any idea who these people are, but we could look at us compared to people within our same 15-mile radius to see that, you know what, we were actually lower in the percentage of AR, perhaps, or we were high on the category PALs, N and O, and all the ones I don't remember which is higher. But we were high in those categories, but our actual patient out-of-pocket costs in some against some practices were almost $50 lower. When we looked at that, sure enough, it was because we had a in whatever time frame we were looking at, we had a significantly higher number of $0 frames that our staff were selling. Again, goes back to that process of, oh, you know what? Okay, well, Livermore's down, our average is 371 a patient, and okay, that's good because the California average is 329. Oh, we feel good. Till we go locally and we find out, hey, these guys within this radius are actually coming out $50 ahead of us. What are we missing? We can't, our staff can't say, well, our patients are, they're different. They're not spending. No, 5 miles away, somebody's spending $50 more. So that's a new report. We're gonna have some fun with that one. Our docs are figuring out how to gel that one, but that is a huge difference in the practice report. And I think there's some very useful data there that either VSP knows or doesn't know, or the doctors have options to acquire that is very useful for them in training their staff.
It's really fascinating and recognizing perhaps some of the limitations on the vendor side from a data standpoint, but actually how valuable the vision care data has been for your practice because of that comparison piece. How often are you reviewing this or making decisions based upon, say, vision care report data plans like the VSP one you mentioned?
Obviously, you can get caught up in all the numbers, and we never want to be that person. None of our docs will ever be that person who's going to be that CEO of a company who sees patients once a week, right? So, getting down with seeing patients all the time, part of the challenge of doing that is, of course, we have to set ourselves up for these practices. You can get lost in all this Edge Pro, Glimpse data, VSP data. And so, we've strategically set ourselves up. So, at least once a month, we're looking at it because that's how we pay our doctors. So, we need to see what the productions are. But the other side of it is, hey, what's happening with our staff? What are we actually producing? And so, we look at those things at least once a month. Our two administrative team leaders, the non-doctors, are looking at it on a regular basis as well, just to see, are there trends? Is, Sarah having a tendency to not seeing as many patients? She's not prescribing as much versus Liz versus whatever. And it's useful for them too, because it attaches into, real time what, this last week has done. And so that's a, again, how often, we tease with it. It's like anything else. You look day to day and it's a snapshot, but over a period of time, it's useful. So if that answers that question.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's really helpful to know. Steve, we've talked a lot about leveraging data, leveraging these reports, the data that's valuable and the data that isn't for how you make decisions in your practice. What haven't we talked about in this space that we should be talking about?
One of the things that comes up with us, we are like everyone, right? You look in our area and high tech and a variety of things. One thing we looked at again was looking at all of our networks. I don't know how often docs do this. I don't know how often they look and say, "All right, well, it's another year. Let's see how many vision care plans I got this year. Who am I going to do or not do? Oh, we have to have this plan, otherwise, we're going to lose patients or vice versa." We took a very strong look at this. Again, I think coming out of pandemic, I mean, pandemic was a challenge for us. I mean, with such a third party high percentage patient base, and our margins were tight, and And we needed to obviously keep our staff employed too. And so we looked at all this and said, you know what? Darn it, we got to take a look at this and see what's going on. Which are our plans actually that we're networks on? Are we just jumping on these plans because liberal optometry needs to be on every plan? Well, we looked at it, and it turns out most of the plans were not even covering our costs for an exam time. In fact, in all honesty, we had three plans in our area that reimbursed us the same as the Medicaid programs do. Well, that's just crazy. Why would, as we used to say, we decided at that point if we're going to donate our eye care services to our community, we're going to donate it to those folks who truly need our help and not those folks who happen to, basically work for a company that allows them to drive a Tesla, but then and also come to our office with a $15 latte, right? I mean, if we're getting the same reimbursement as a Medi-Cal for these folks, that's crazy. What's our business? So we dropped all vision care plans that did not cover our fixed overhead costs or provide an exam to our patients. And we now are VSP only, and all the obviously the PPOs and all the medical groups and all that. But we're one of only two Medi-Cal, which in our area is Medicaid, providers within 15 miles. And yeah, we get the whiny patients. Oh, you got to be back on my plan. No, your company is reimbursing you or thinks of you the same as a Medicaid patient. And you talk to your HR department. So that's one thing we did. It's been easier. A lot of the other companies, the other vision care plans in our area, it's different from across the country. They didn't have the internal support for our staff. We even had some providers that were, we'd see the patient, we'd submit, we'd had all the verification forms, and a day later we get a note back telling us we overcharged the patient for whatever reason. We just can't have that. So one thing that we looked at is I think a lot of docs really take a hard look at are your plans that you're on a network of. Really covering or doing what you want it to do. And different parts of the country, maybe if VSP was only 10% of my business, maybe that would be one of those in, I don't know, Missouri, I don't know. But we know in our area and our demographics, and also what's nice is VSP, no other vision care plan could do this. And I'm not stroking VSP here, but it was the only ones that would actually give us the ability to say, here's all of the companies in our area and the type of coverages they have. So as a result of that, we knew ahead of time, here's the typical patient walking in, a new person from Google, a new person from Workday. Here's what we can anticipate what their expectations are. No other plan could do that. And so one of the best things we did, we just needed to get out of the sucking sound of money going out with the care plans. I think most docs, if they looked at their practice numbers, they might come to the same realization, more profitable and much happier. They just need to plug the poor quality VCP drain that sucks the positive staff energy out of us and our cash out of our practices.
Steve, you've given us a ton to think about, and this is only just the beginning. Thank you, first of all, for sharing your wisdom and expertise with our listeners. We always wrap our podcast with the same question. We believe leaders are readers. What are you currently reading?
Well, it's not going to be very glamorous, Justin. I am a constant reader of anything DIY, automotive, business management, golf. I'm in the process of rebuilding a '65 convertible Mustang, so I'm in the process of doing anything I can about that. Golf, so I'm not I, anything that's contemporary. I love business management discussions and podcasts and things. Golf is my therapy, actually. I enjoy golf. I mean, obviously, we all sit in a room all day with no windows and mostly in the dark. So, getting out and walking a golf course for me is therapy for me. There's never a bad day doing that. And honestly, never a bad day seeing patients either.
I love that. Steve, this is fantastic. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Glad to help out anytime.
If you've enjoyed the Practice Advantage podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. And if you want to take your practice to the next level, for the sake of your patients, your team, your community, and your bottom line, give us a call 1-800-959-2020, option 3. See you next time.